Session number 15474, Rule 5.
Mr. Jones, Rule 5.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned about the prisoners, because rather accidentally we came across an incident which was quite disgusting, really. By the time I'm talking about, Viz had become quite a garrison, and what the bits of vines that we'd cleared away in the early days just to play some football on had now developed sufficiently to become a runway. But before the runway was operative, see, so many aircraft were coming over from Italy to bomb places like the Ploiești oil fields and Vienna and places like that. When these planes were limping home, they were looking often for a refuge to land in. So we cleared these vines, and we had quite a number of forced landings, and saved quite a lot of people, actually. But on one particular day, a Liberator came down, missed this runway, and disappeared over a hillside, and crash landed in an area that we hadn't prepared at all. When we went over there to investigate, found that they were all perfectly safe, all the chaps were perfectly safe. But where they had landed, there seemed to be some graves with boots and parts of bodies still exposed. And it transpired that fortuitously, the aircraft had landed just after an execution squad had killed a lot of German prisoners. We had heard that from our colleagues on guns outside Viz town, that a lot of German prisoners had escaped, and that's like impossible that to think that German prisoners could have escaped. They said that prisoners under the partisan guard had escaped. But what had happened, of course, is that they had taken out these prisoners way out of town onto this very spot where this plane had crashed, executed them, and was actually in the process of burying them when the whole thing happened. This was transmitted to higher authority, of course, and from research I've made myself at Kew, it developed into quite an incident, because our people were very, very concerned, not only that the fact that Geneva had been violated, but also because it gave the Germans justification for doing the same thing to us if any of our people were captured. It went right through to high command, went right through to Churchill, it went right through to Tito. And it, according to what I've read, it developed an assurance that this would never happen again. Whether it did or not, I don't know. But that was our only instance where we knew where German prisoners had been killed. The only evidence. But the signs were obvious. I mean, Germans would fight to the death if they were surrounded by partisans. But they were quite ready, if the odds were so obviously stacked against them, to surrender to us. Indeed, on some of the raids, the psychological warfare branch used to take loudspeakers to say, you know, you are surrounded and we are British troops here, then you'll be accorded the Geneva Convention terms if you surrender. And often save lots of lives.
Sorry, I interrupted you with you having your bit of a holiday at Bari.
Yes, Bari again was a bit of a scrounge, and this went on until the winter or the autumn of 1944, just like in the days when they were calling for volunteers for parachutists, they started calling for volunteers for training as wireless operators. And out of sheer boredom, several of us volunteered for this, and we were taken off for 6 weeks over Christmas, it was actually, to the Salerno, the Royal Artillery base at Salerno, where they turned us into so-called wireless operators. That's right. I'm just thinking my chronology now.
Did not Albania come before Salerno?
Yes, it did. Yes, there was. I have jumped a bit. After the short break at Bari, we went up to a place called San Alejandro for more landing training, and Albania was September the 21st, I should think, of 1944. This was meant to be a 48-hour raid on Albania. We were to land on a beach which would be about 4 or 5 miles from the port of Sarandi. Sarandi was the Albanian port which served the German garrison on Corfu. And there had been a reconnaissance party landed at the spot where we were to land 2 nights before, but nothing had been heard from them. And so it was decided that we'd go ahead and land on this beach. Again, this was number two Army Commando and 40 Royal Marine Commando and ourselves. Well, the whole thing was fated right from the start because the weather was so atrocious crossing the Adriatic that we were virtually carrying the bodies off and landing them on the beach as if lining them up for burial, and I think some of them were so sick that they didn't care whether they were buried or not. And we were met then by remnants of the observation party who had lost everything. They'd been ambushed and they'd lost wireless, so they couldn't communicate, and they would have put the whole thing off if they could have communicated, because they'd found that the valley that we were supposed to go up to get round to the back of Sarandi was impenetrable, virtually impenetrable, and totally unsuited for movement of large volumes of troops. Anyway, it was decided that we would stay. There was an undoubted conflict, which has appeared in recent books, between Commander Churchill, who was in charge, number two Army Commando, and therefore in charge of the operation, and the Commander of Land Forces Adriatic. It seemed they hated, he says this, now it's not my opinion, he said he hated Brigadier Davy so much so that when on one of the raids he was fished out of the sea, he says they often wonder why. And this is in print. Brigadier Churchill went back the next night by LCI to Bari to confer with Davy. You'd not believe this, but they crossed the same night. Brigadier Davy landed in Albania, and so they didn't meet until they got back to Albania. From which point, instead of aborting the raid, as everybody thought they would do, they decided they would make it a full-scale operation and land many more troops, and at different points as well. Coincident with that, the weather broke, and we had continuous rain for about 12 nights So much so that the force was being, half the force was being, had been evacuated by day 12 with exposure, trench feet, believe it or not, and all sort of problems relating to exposure. No plan had been formulated yet. One troop of our 75 millimeter gun howitzers, which had been landed on this beach, Sugar Beach, it's called, had found that the mountains were so high that they couldn't get the trajectory, and so they had to be evacuated and moved further up the coast. It appeared that the Germans were in some strength at Sarandi, and at an inland town of called Delvini, which controlled the road from Sarandi into Albania and Greece and Yugoslavia and away. When the weather subsided, the whole thing was reviewed again, and it was decided that we would climb the mountains with all our equipment and make this raid on October the 9th at the rear of Sarandi, by which time, of course, the Germans well knew we were there. They were able to shell us all the time from guns on Corfu and from guns on Delvini, both high caliber 105s at least, and they could get over the mountains. And so we had quite a lot of casualties before we did anything positive. But the raid did go in on October the 9th. The assaults mainly from the land being by Number 2 Commando. Number 40 Marine Commando made a new landing on the outskirts of Sarandi. Another landing was made the other side of Sarandi by RAF regiments, some RAF, a contingent of the RAF regiment. And Sarandi was eventually taken, I should think, on October the 12th. A lot of prisoners were taken. We had quite a lot of casualties. Then, of course, Corfu surrendered. The garrison on Corfu surrendered. So the prisoner record on Corfu was quite high, because they didn't put up any resistance at all. Once they knew that their escape was cut off through Sarandi, they all surrendered and were taken back, as we were, in October the 13th, 14th, to Brindisi, where, by which time, I personally contacted so-called malaria. I had all the symptoms of malaria and was put into hospital in Brindisi. I was only there for a week, and they decided it wasn't. It was probably just exhaustion. And we returned to the Bari area after Corfu. Now, it was at that time that they called for volunteers for the wireless course at Salerno after Albania. And we went at Salerno for 6 weeks, bridging Christmas, 94-5, and when I came back from a course, I contracted amoebic dysentery, and put me in hospital in Bari, 98th British General Hospital, for 6 weeks of treatment, by which time I was a frail shadow of my former self. And pretty drastic treatment. I was given I was released there about March the 27th from that hospital, and given a certificate demanding that I had some sick leave because I was pretty awful condition. But when I got back to the unit, before I handed this in to the office, I heard that E battery, that's the battery of the 25 pounders, had already gone up north for operations at Camacchio. Well, I really knew they'd gone up to Italy at that stage. I didn't know it was Camacchio involved. I didn't know Camacchio. And they were looking for a replacement wireless operator. So having heard this, I had kept the thing in my pocket. I still got it. The leave recommendation. Volunteered, was kitted out with a 22 set and sent off to join E-Battery on, of all dates, April the 1st, where I was probably with them on April the 1st. April the 1st I joined them.
This is E-Battery Reading Sport Regiment?
Yes, yes. Now, to my mind, this battery had always done exceptionally well on all of its operations, and didn't take me long to realize that this was really a first-class unit of excellent officers, and very very proud. And it was the best, I would think, was the best unit in the Raiding Support Regiment. Mind you, I was such a novice. As a wireless operator, I had really a cheek in applying for it, but I did want to be in at the end, so to speak. And I got with two very good chaps who were, because wireless communication in artillery is so vital. I was placed with two gunners who were so good and so helpful and understanding that they sort of coached me along and really were invaluable to me. And the operation of Camacchio consisted of the lake, actually, is quite a huge lake, but the Germans had extended it by to flood the area around, right across the area to Argenta, to make things difficult for the progress of the 8th Army on the right flank and the 5th Army, which were on the left flank. The stalemated position in Italy had gone on since Christmas, but they're rather like before Alamein, they were building up all their supplies ready for the final onslaught by the 8th Army and the 5th Army, which was to go in and cross the Senio on April the 9th. There was this thought that if we could start a diversion earlier, they would think that the attack would come from the sea, and this suited High Command very well to use what was then known as the Number 2 Commando Brigade to start an operation in the area of Camacchio. By attacking the spit of land which separated it from the Adriatic, where the Germans had got convinced they were that an attack was going to come from the sea. Well, we attacked from the lake. It was, again, like so many of these things, almost a utter failure, because the fantails, these are the sort of amphibious tanks which are not with no armor, that were to take us, were bogged down in the mud on at D-Day, our D-Day, not the D-Day, and the whole plan was to have been well, was in jeopardy for some time, but they decided that they would get all these smaller craft and tow them across the lake and make the landings on the inside of this of the spit. As a sort of paradox, I don't know why this happened, but the marine commandos, you know, per mari per terum, were to make the attacks on the land side of the spit, and the army commando, number two commando, was to come in from the water. The defences on the inside of the spit were not so formidable as those on the outside, convinced that the Germans were that it would come from the sea, but it was heavily mined. But the attack went in fairly on time, and objectives were taken very quickly on that first morning. The spit was separated at various parts by canals, and we advanced to the Canale Valletta, which on the opposite side of which were two objectives. One was Camacchio, the town of Camacchio, and the other one was Porto Garibaldi, which was the outlet to the sea. It was at Porto Garibaldi where the Royal Marines VC was won by, you know, Corporal Tom Hunter attacking various machine gun posts, firing Ben gun from the hip, was killed and awarded the posthumous VC. It was also at Camacchio that the Dane Captain Anders Larsen won his VC for similar work and attacking the positions, pillbox positions, by approaching them personally and dropping hand grenades in there. He was killed. I couldn't have been very far from either of these two incidents because at a reunion that we went to at the invitation of the Italian partisans in 1961, there was quite an argument as to where exactly Tom Hunter fell, even by his commanding officer, sergeant, and the rest of us. And Corporal Crouch, who was with David, with Anders Larsen when he was killed, I helped to bury. So I couldn't have been very far from those actions at the time. I didn't know I was burying Corporal Crouch, who was with Anders Larsen, until I read Anders Larsen's mother's book on his life. It was Corporal Crouch. We knew I'd written down that we'd buried, but he was the one that was with of the SBS, that is Special Boat Service, who had been killed at the time. But in my own opinion, both those lives were lost needlessly because it didn't. Advance the operation. You know, you expect that in a situation like that, that with the objective achieved, it's done some good. But we were still trying to cross the canal to Porto Garibaldi a week later. So nothing was achieved by it. The RAF had almost complete control of the air. Well, it had complete control of the air, and so eventually the Germans were bombed out of Porto Garibaldi, retreated, and we could cross. And by the time we got across, the big offensive, the Eighth Army offensive, had started on the 9th of April. Towards the Po and Venice and Trieste. Bologna was taken almost coincident, I think, with the time that we were taking Porto Garibaldi, and the Argenta Gap, as such it was, was cleared around about the same time. I personally was involved in two operations at Camacchio. I was involved in the drive up the spit, and then brought back for, that was called Operation Roast. And I was brought back then with other parts of our unit to land on the western side of the lake near Argenta. Here we did use fantails, and we used them quite successfully, in that many of them were used, and we were able to land things like our own gun howitzers, trailers with ammunition. We did think it was going to be a highly dangerous operation, because we started out in dark and we landed in daylight into squelchy mud and a very difficult terrain, because the whole area had been flooded. There was a good part to this, of course, too, because it meant that when the German mortars were firing at us, there was very little fragmentation of the shrapnel, because it was going deep into the shells were going deep into the mud. And early on, when we landed, the German defences had started to pick off the fantails on their right. On our left, we could see one go up in flames, two go up in flames, and then, as if by magic, they stopped firing altogether. And it was earlier than we expected that the Eighth Army's main force had started to move up and got them within the range of their heavy guns. And we were pretty well safe then. From that moment, the chase was on, what has often been called the race for Trieste. And so my war ended, I suppose, on late in April, I should say, 21st or 23rd of April, 23rd of April. And why it's significant, that date, is that when we went on this reunion in 91, we went around the cemeteries at Argenta and at Ravenna. And what struck me forcibly was the number of casualties that were incurred on that last week in April. It was pathetic, really, to think that these chaps had been fighting right to the end, and the people would hear of the end of hostilities long before they would hear from formal sources of their deaths. And there they were, even though colleagues of ours in commandos, both the commandos, and regiments like the Buffs and the Kents, the Buffs and the Queen's regiment, who were involved in that final push around the Argenta Gap. So that's my war ended. Just one little incident before I'd say my war ended. After we took Porto Garibaldi, one of the OP officers said he would like to push on to the next village, and just to do a recce.